Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and on today's episode, we're exploring the world of podcasting with a true pioneer and powerhouse, Todd Cochran. We're about to uncover the secrets behind skyrocketing your success through the power of public speaking and podcasting. So prepare to revolutionize your approach to communication and business. All right, folks, get ready to meet the force behind one of the biggest names in the podcasting universe. I'm thrilled to introduce Todd Cochran, an innovator and trailblazer in our industry. Todd's not just a player in the game. He's been setting the rules since day one. He's the founder and CEO of Blueberry Podcasting, the second largest podcasting service in the U.S., and it's also become the go-to spot for top-tier podcast hosting services and the home of the number one podcasting plugin for WordPress. He's the visionary behind the People's Choice Podcast Awards and the Tech Podcast Network. And with his groundbreaking book, Podcasting, the Do-It-Yourself Guide, Todd didn't just dip his toes in the water. He practically built the pool we're all swimming in today. So get ready to soak up some wisdom from the man who's been writing the book on podcasting since before it was cool. Todd Cochran, welcome to the spotlight.
Kelly, wow, that was an intro. Thank you for having me.
I love it. There is so much to unwrap here. And I always like to start with, tell me how you got here. What got you into podcasting and when it was just such a new medium?
It really started with an accident, a literal accident. I got hurt in a swimming pool. I was active duty Navy in June of 2004, and I was a flyer. I wasn't a pilot. I was a back-end guy on P-3 aircraft, and basically I broke my back and was grounded and couldn't fly no more and was living in a body cast. And when you're broke in the Navy, they look at you and they say, what are you going to do for Uncle Sugar? And I basically volunteered, and one never volunteers oneself, but I volunteered to go to Waco, Texas to basically oversee aircraft builds. And I ended up in Waco in September, October of 2004. And because I was in that body cast in Texas, I spent a lot of time wherever there was air conditioning. And in my hotel room, the air conditioning unit blew directly on the table or across the table where I had my laptop. And I spent a lot of time there, and I heard about this thing called podcasting. And I was like, huh, I like to talk. Now, I was a failed blogger, and failed meaning that I probably had maybe 300 people a week just stumble across my website versus purposely find it. But podcasting, when I turned on that mic for the first time and launched my first episode, my world pretty much changed from that point forward. And that was October 4th of 2004. So just a few short months short of 20 years ago, which just seems crazy to me.
That is wild. Actually, if you think about that, 2004, you're at the very beginning. How many people were doing it back then, do you think? How many were out?
I know I was in the first, like, maybe 50. No idea what the number was, but there wasn't 100 yet, but it was early, very early.
So what was it like, obviously, from a personal experience that you're sharing with having been through the injury? That's game changing on its own.
Right.
I love it that this was cowboy country back then. You literally are lassoing something that there's nobody to go to say, how do we do this? How do you make it better? What was your experience like with that at the very beginning?
We made everything up. We didn't know. And none of us there was only one person who we call the Podfather, Adam Curry, that really had any broadcast background. Everyone else was just, we were, again, making up as we go. We had to learn the tech. We had to figure out how to get the media hosted because there was no media host. And that was led to a discussion later on, a few months later, with my wife about how much it was costing to do the show, because it was quite expensive because we basically, we're changing hosting providers every 3 or 4 days just to keep ahead of the bandwidth curve. And it was really wild. And what was even more crazy is that just a short 2 months later, Wiley Publishing called me and said, "Hey, we want you to write the book on podcasting." We are still figuring it out. It really was quite those early days. But that's why in the very, very beginning, it was geeks, high people that had computer skills, comedians. You had to have a super technical background. It is not what it is today, that's for sure. And it was expensive to launch a show in the very, very beginning.
And what were you at the very beginning? What was your show about? What subject matter were you focusing on?
Yeah, it's a flagship show I still do, 1737 episodes called Geek News Central. It's a tech show. I break down tech for the common man. I typically cover 20 to 30 tech stories that happen. Yeah, it's a show that I still do today. I'm still in the trenches, I guess for a better word, digging dirt and finding new audience members. So it's an ever evolving process, even 19 plus years later.
Oh yeah, tech is that's just becoming bigger and bigger, but how exciting. You've always got subject matter
Absolutely.
and just stuck with something so long. Great choice of topic, I think.
Yeah, and it's advice I give to anyone that's a content creator or a speaker. You have to love what you're talking about. You can't make something up. You can't chop a topic. That doesn't work. If you're not passionate about it, at least in the podcasting space, you're not going to last, because if you're going to get bored real quick or run out of content.
So that's how you've kept ahead of so many others, is that you're passionate about the subject matter.
Yeah, and I think if you are passionate and you have a little knowledge, in the beginning I had a little knowledge, didn't have a lot. You learn more over time. You learn from your guest. You learn it basically it's you grow with your show, and you find your voice after a significant amount of time, and it becomes second nature. But still, it's a lot of work to put out a podcast.
Is the do-it-yourself guide that you wrote, I love it that you were invited to write it. That wasn't really the plan for you. You show up and you create this guide. Is it still applicable today?
Fundamentals are that Apple Podcasts wasn't even around yet, or iTunes at that time. That chapter's completely missing. What's ironic is I had gotten that email from them, and they said, "Hey, we want you to write a book on podcasting." And English was not my strong subject in school, and I had wrote a pretty explicative response back to them that basically was, "You got to be beeping kidding me." And I didn't know who Wiley was. I wasn't an author. I was an aviation electronics technician. I had nary a clue. And I looked them up online. I'm like, oh, they're quite the force in book writing. And they were also willing to give me an advance. And that solved some of the money challenges that had come in spending over $1,000 a month in those early days to keep the show online. I was able to wave the check in front of the missus and say, "Hey, I monetized this thing. We've figured out how to make some money." No, and then the book writing, I think, to be honest with you, I think everyone should write at least one book. Everyone has one book in them.
They
It's
say that's true. That's
not that
very
hard.
true.
Starts with an outline, and then the book writes itself.
So, what was the United States Navy thinking about all this at the time?
I wasn't making any money in the beginning, and then when I did, I had to go to them and say, "Hey, by the way, I'm doing this thing." And they were receptive to it. The Navy's not objected as long as it doesn't affect your duty and your work, as long as you do it after hours. It became more challenging, quite honestly, in 2005 when I decided to start a business associated with podcasting. And then it got a little more challenging because I was literally, as soon as I hit the door in the afternoon, I was living in Hawaii at the time. I'd roll home 5, 6 o'clock at night, and then I would work to 2 o'clock in the morning. And then building a business, you never sleep, it never ends. So I was giving my time to the government and giving the time to the Navy, and that really continued for 3 years until I retired in 2007 from the Navy. So it was, yeah, I was burning the candle on both ends. But I think anyone that's an entrepreneur building a business or anything, they have to do that anyway.
Yeah, that's just part of the game plan. If you're
Yeah.
not committed, you're going under.
Yeah.
While this is all happening and you're making this decision, you've been really instrumental in introducing some significant innovations in the podcasting industry. You came up with the People's Choice Podcast Awards and the Tech Podcast Network. Those are two biggies. How did those come about? What was What made you jump from having a podcast to becoming a key influencer and then creating a business that to this day is still around, Blueberry Podcasting? How'd that come?
January of 05, me and another gentleman were talking about collaborating. And so we decided to build this network called the Tech Podcast Network. Now, he didn't hang out too long. So I was basically the chief of a whole trying to herd the cats and get a bunch of content creators to collaborative work together. And that's worth a whole 1 hour interview in itself. But what it really did, it set the stage. I had about 20 other shows. We were working together, cross promoting, doing some of this early stuff that was just being made up on the fly. We thought it was a good idea to promote each other. It turned out that it was. And in June of that year, I had gotten, June of 05, I'd gotten contacted by GoDaddy and they said, hey, we want you to be a sponsor. We want to sponsor your show. And I didn't really know how much to charge. And long story is, I charged them about 10 times less than I should have. And we come back a month later and they told me the performance that we'd done. And I took 24 hours to think about it and came back with a new number. And they agreed to it so fast that I knew it automatically undercut myself as well. Again, we had no idea what to charge for this. But in the end, the relationship I made with GoDaddy, which still is today, they are still a sponsor of my tech show all these years later. But it's based upon performance. You perform for me, I will pay you. And if you're under performance, we will talk to you and you better get on performance. That's how it works. But a key element was said, a gal by the name of Chris Redlinger really set the idea in my head about a business. She said to me, do you know other podcasters who would like to advertise for GoDaddy? And that was at the end of the phone call of the first month. And I said, yes, I do. So I went back to the tech network and I said, hey, who wants advertising with GoDaddy? About 20 people raised their hand and we said we'd do it. And so I started juggling the stones to start this. I'm thinking to myself, what would you rather have, Todd? 1% of 100% of your own income, or would you like to have a percentage of everyone else's? And I said, there's a business here. And literally on my podcast, I said, I need a lawyer, I need an MBA, I need a graphics guy, and I need a software developer. I'm having a phone call in 10 days. And if you're interested, be there. And 10 days later, we used freeconferencecall.com. And got on a phone call. And I said, first of all, I said, if you don't have X amount of dollars to invest in a business, please hang up. And there was here this click, click. And I'm thinking, oh my God, there's no anybody left. But I ended up with a lawyer, an MBA, and a graphics guy on the phone, listeners of my show. And the graphics guy said, I know a programmer. I said, call him and get him on the phone. And we formed Raw Voice, which is the parent company of Blueberry, over the telephone. Set the company up. We didn't meet each other for 6 months. Three of the original primaries are still on the board of directors. It's been an amazing ride ever since. And we all work like dogs. And one by one, we're able to quit our day jobs and build the business that we have today.
That's an incredible story. I think a lot of people are going to be inspired by that because that's really a great roadmap and a proof of concept that you have. A lot of people don't know what to charge, how to go about doing this. You created something magnificent. How do you think your background, because obviously you're a strong leader, how do you think your background as a US Navy veteran has influenced your leadership and your approach to business?
Number one, it set a work ethic for me that I have to work as hard or harder than anyone else in the company, number one. And these many years later, it's usually that's still the case to an extent. But at the same time, I had the advantage of after that accident, I spent a lot of time with civilians, big civilian companies, big Fortune 500 companies, and was able to see the different management techniques between the military and the civilian. And this gave me some exposure of what to do and what not to do. If I had just come straight out of the military and just had the military background, I probably would not have been as successful. So having that interwoven, and I always used to say it was like this ongoing negotiation with the civilian company. And it gave me the ability then to really have these skills that I don't have to come in here and be a boss. I just need to come in here and organize and to align myself with good people. And that's what we strive to do from day one, is to put the right people in the right seats with the right attitude. Because attitude is really, you have one bad egg in it, or one bad apple, and it just can bring the whole company down. We've learned as we've went. And so I was lucky enough to have that experience for at least 3 years of that dual working, and not just, 22 years of pure, or 25 years of pure military service, where the outcome may have been a little different. Because some people have a hard time transitioning. Imagine you don't have to pick which clothes you go to work in every day. You just show up the same outfit. And you just have a certain regimen that you run. The civilian world is not like that. That helped me a lot.
So you've really shown a great framework that you've put together, tried and true. Tell me about Blueberry Podcasting. What sets it apart in the industry? Why would people want to join with you? Obviously, I know some of those answers.
Yeah, sure.
But what do you do that sets you apart that benefits a new podcaster that wants to, or a seasoned podcaster that wants to be involved with the right company?
If I look at it from a backwards perspective, our customer support is really a linchpin of the company. When you need to call somebody, you can call a friend. And I have a great tech support team. We have the whole host of services. Podcasting today is commoditized. There's 20 competitors. 10 years ago, there was 5. Now there's 20 plus. What we really have to make it up on is features and support. And the feature set that the company offers is very wide. But at the same token, equally important is the podcast. The company was built by podcasters. So we're all people that are creating content down in the trenches, understanding how hard it is to build an audience and grow an audience, while at the same time understanding the value of building your own brand on your own.com. I've said this saying literally. I probably said that literally word one too many times today already, but at least 100,000 times. You don't build your castle on rented ground. So if you are a creator, you have to build your brand on something that you own and control, so that a changing business model does not affect the plan that you have, and you have the ability to make your own adjustments. So our introduction of PowerPress, a podcasting plugin for WordPress, which now is used by over 100,000 shows to power their podcast, say that 3 times real quick, is really a fundamental bedrock of the company, in that we allow people to have their brands on their .coms and basically be the point of origin for all their content, which does several things. It allows Google to say, this is the origin of this content. It's not syndicated somewhere else or off of another platform. You control your RSS feed. It's like controlling the radio tower to your podcast. And there's just this whole host of things. Now, granted, we have a number of customers that come on and just publish through our dashboard. Maybe they're with a corporate. As a matter of fact, I was just talking with the company 3 minutes before we started the interview today, just bringing 500 shows over to us. And they don't have a platform that will support podcasting internally. So they're going to host it on directly on blueberry.com. We'll provide the feed and everything that they need. So there's a segment of customers that do that with us. But our bedrock piece of ideology is that we will graduate with you. As you decide you need more features, need more things, we can add that to what you need to be successful. And if you start with us on blueberry.com and want to move to a .com, we've got that ability to do that as well. That's one of the main, really huge selling points. We are not the cheapest podcast host in the business. We don't go running. We don't. I think that's a recipe for disaster. Race to zero is probably not a good business model. But what we do deliver is a really high quality product with a great team.
This is fantastic news. I think a lot of people that have entertained doing podcasting but don't know the ropes, don't have the tech background, would feel so supported here. And I love the focus on customer service, something that is very hard to get these days. It's beautiful to hear that you have such a major focus on that.
And we understand that there's a lot of the companies that I compete with that outsource that somewhere else, and that's their choice. I'm pretty much a red, white, and blue type of guy. All my employees are based here in the United States and are paid competitive wages. We've not moved anything offshore. And maybe that's not important to a lot of people, but it is to me based upon serving in the Navy for 25 years. I think that's important to keep dollars at home. That's one piece of what we are. I really think, though, in the end, the thing I'm most proud of, if I look back to 2004 when it was predominantly white and men, that now the ladies and ladies of color are leading the pack and creating content today. We are the most, the podcasting is the most diverse and inclusive space that one could even imagine. I was just at a conference where I think the ladies outnumbered the men, which is unusual for a show of almost any tech show I've ever been to or any type of trade show, and just knocking out of the ballpark. And it's amazing because everyone has an equal voice in this space.
I was going to say, I think that's, I too really appreciate that. I love that this is such an intimate platform. I absolutely love podcasting for that reason. Public speaking is absolutely essential to grow your business exponentially, but there's something in podcasting that I just feel like it's such an intimate opportunity for people to be able to sit in and hear a probative conversation. I think it's wonderful to be a listener for that. I think it's wonderful to be a participant. I love being able to do it.
You're going to find this interesting. A number of years I went to out to Vegas and I spoke in front of nearly all the educators in the Las Vegas region, Clark County. There was probably 5,000 teachers there. And I walked away from that event with a little bit of a tick tick in my head because I really hadn't thought of it prior to that. I was reaching that many people on my podcast and more already when I went and spoke to them. But speaking in front of 5,000 people was a lot different than podcasting to 5,000 people. So the amount of preparation that I had done for those 5,000 people live was much different than the preparation I was doing for the 5,000 people on my podcast. And I changed my mind at that very moment. So today, I prepare as much for my next episode as if I'm going to walk on a stage in front of 5,000 people. A lot of podcasters don't do that. A lot of podcasters say, oh, I'm reaching 500 people, but they never visualize what 500 people look like. As my audience has grown, I've done just a little Google search. Show me 265,000 people. Show me an image or two. And I print that, it's on my wall. So that way I can say, this is how many people you're talking to, Todd. You need to prepare so that you don't disappoint this audience that has given their time to come listen to you. So if you're a public speaker already and you keep that mindset in your podcast, you're going to do very well.
That's a wonderful perspective shift, I think, for people to be able to see that podcast. You're absolutely right. What a great idea. In fact, I will incorporate that in of putting up a photo of however many people I imagine being able to speak to at one time.
Oh, that's right. And some people tell me my audience is only 100 people. And my response to that is, how many people does your boss get to talk to? And print that 100 people out and don't tell me that you're not going to, let's say it's Rotary and you're going to go in to talk to 100 people at Rotary. Don't tell me your hands aren't going to get sweaty palmy if you've never done that before. And yet you're already doing that naturally on your podcast. And that's where people have this aha moment and understand that you're talking even and you're more intimate with them than you, because at Rotary they're eating lunch, right? Looking up at you once in a while, maybe. And maybe someone's taking a nap in the corner, maybe, you know. But here we right now, as we speak, people are plugged into us. They got their earbuds and we're literally, hey everybody, we're literally in your head. So, you know, that's the thing that podcasters have to realize.
It's so cool. I really appreciate that. I think about that too. I think, who is listening? Because I'm speaking to them as well, not just my guest, though I love the intimate conversation with my guest, but I love that. So tell me, how do you see the future of podcasting evolving? You've really been there since the forefront. How do companies and podcasters keep up with all the rapid advancements in technology, like AI? For gosh sakes, AI
Yeah.
is a big player in all this.
We fully embraced AI for planning, production, social. We're going to have a clipping service, but here's what's really going to happen. AI is We're using the stupidest AI we will ever use at this moment. And by the time this episode comes out, the AI will be maybe just a little bit smarter and a little bit smarter. But what's going to happen? Automated milling machines of people putting out thousands and thousands of blog posts and news reels. And a lot of this is going to be generated by AI. And I think what's going to happen is people that have original voices and have original experiences are really going to be sought after, because who do you trust when a lot of this machine gets in really full gear and is creating content? You're going to trust the person, hopefully, that you can see on a screen or hear in your ears with inflection and emotion and life and everything that goes on. People are going to seek real voices and people that they trust. And I think it goes the same for YouTubers, maybe TikTokers a little bit, maybe no podcasters, anyone that is putting their voice space likeness out there that's not AI generated is going to be sought out. Now, granted, I think AI can help a lot, help with show ideas, inspiration, these types of things. I think it's going to help a lot. The world is going to change. I was at an event, a Google gal said, or actually the lead person of AI at Google is a woman, and she said there's going to be those that are super creative. There's going to be those that are subject matter experts, and then those that do thunking. And of those that do thunking, creating the sales report, creating a proposal, those thunking jobs are gone in 3 years. So you either got to be a creative or you got to be a subject matter expert. So I think most podcasters probably fall into both the creative category and the subject matter expert and are probably going to be safe. But everyone in the middle, that thunking stuff, they're in trouble. And I hate to say it, but I truly believe
If you want to thrive, if you want to get
it.
through this, you're going to have to up your game. And I think that part is great. And I do think humanness still counts. In fact, it may end up counting a whole lot more.
Oh, I think it's going to count for everything. I really do, because can you trust what you read now? Well, not
Especially
without
it's
a.
really well written, and it's really it starts to all look the same, and you think
Yeah,
people are
it
getting
does.
smarter when they recognize it too. You're starting to see it and say, oh, AI.
Right.
So what smarter consumers?
Even when we were creating our AI to put out the email summary for an episode, I was like fighting with this thing. It felt like I was in a knock 'em, drag 'em out fist fight with our language interface, because I was like, quit being so flowery. Just tell me the facts. Don't say in conclusion. Do people already know this? The audience already knows this podcaster. You have to just give the facts. Don't put sugar on it.
It's
And I
almost just talk to me.
right.
Just talk to me.
And
Don't talk at me.
don't let your imagination go. I'm sure my first email complaint from folks that are using the AI that we put together, Blueberry's gonna be like, hey, this thing is like being flowery. I'm sure that's what's gonna happen. But it'll improve over time. Who knows?
Yeah, it's a learning process. At least that's my perspective. It's certainly a learning process. And if you do it as a partnership, if you think about it as a partnership and you're involved in it, it's a whole lot better than having something spit out some kind of perfection or something that's recognized in the marketplace. People are just going to gloss over. It's invisible. So, public speaking, now with what you do, how much actual public speaking do you do outside of podcasting? You have that experience.
Oh, to be honest with you, I don't have time to do things outside of podcasting. So I go to speak at most podcasting events, appear on shows like yours. So I guess, do you consider that public speaking? I think so, to an extent. Maybe not panels, that type of thing. But actually going out and telling a story or going to a different group, besides what I do, maybe in a local community, not too much. Maybe someday, maybe that's what'll be my retirement gig. Maybe I will go on this on the speaking circuit and talking about different ways to build companies. Who knows?
Would you enjoy that as much versus the podcasting experience? It's different. It's being on that stage and being at an event in person certainly is a different experience that a lot of people love and a lot of people dread. How is it for you?
I spend about 10 hours a week evangelizing and training and helping podcasters on a weekly basis. So it's in my nature to want to teach people best practices in creating content and doing what I've been doing for the last 20 years. And at the same time, I'm old enough now that I'm recognized that I have to stay current with what I have to feed my brain with new ideas as well. So oftentimes I go to events to hear the younger generation. I'm 59, so it's no doubt I'm a little older. So I go listen to what other folks are doing and getting new ideas and upping my repertoire. But I think that there is going to be a time where I probably will want to share a lot more. And I could share beyond the podcasting space because I've got a pretty rounded world experience over the last number of many years of working.
Pretty incredible pedigree from what I've been able to see, and certainly someone to follow, that's for sure. I wanted to ask you about a subject for new people that are coming into this and they want to figure out the obvious. It's not just having a voice. I have to figure out how to monetize my show, and I need to look at what is the possibility of having people advertise or sponsor my show. You are the guru of that. Starting with GoDaddy, I absolutely love, that used to be a field I was in. I really appreciate strategic partnerships and corporate sponsorship acquisitions. So that's interesting to me. And I wanted to know for the people out there that want to have a podcast, but there's an expense to this. So unless you just want to hear your voice or you have a mission, you got to figure out a way to monetize it. What are the best ways to monetize now? And what is the advertising and sponsorship opportunities available these days?
I'll back up just a little bit.
Okay.
If you're someone is thinking about being a new podcaster, the first thing you have to write down is what is the goal? What is the goal? Is the goal to have more influence? Is the goal to get on a speaking circuit? My goal was to get a press pass to the Consumer Electronics Show. That was my first goal. Okay. I didn't care about the money at the beginning. Is the goal to monetize? What is the goal of the show? Then if you know what the goal of the show is and you know what the topic of the show is, it's pretty easy to do the content to reach the goal if it's focused on that. Monetization, if your pure focus in the beginning is monetization, you're going to be sorely disappointed unless you're Oprah or a celebrity or can bring a pre-built audience with you. If you have a mailing list already of 50,000 people, you're going to do right off the get-go. If you're coming in raw, like I was, a nobody that basically had no audience, you are going to have to build sustained, superior content episode after episode for a period of time. Anyone that's brand new, no matter what the goal is, money or fame, you need to plan for 2 years, a minimum 2 years of very hard work. Just like anything else, you got to grind. If you're doing YouTube, you got to build out YouTube videos a couple times a week. If you're going to do podcasts, and from that, you build an audience, the monetization will come. Now, if you host with Blueberry, you can turn on monetization with an audience of one with programmatic advertising. It's going to take you a little while to get to that $50 minimum to get a check. Okay, because again, smaller audience. Now, the shortcut to that is if you are a neurosurgeon and you're doing a podcast about neurosurgery and you're reaching 1,000 neurosurgeons, so you can pretty much name the sponsorship price from day one. And a case in point, I knew a neurosurgeon was getting $20,000 an episode. He had 1,000 neurosurgeons listening to the show. So he had a niche, high-value audience, highly valuable, highly sought after. So if you can be in that category, oh, wow, just hit the cash machine register, ding, ding. You've won the lottery because this is the fastest way to monetization. Number two, building a big enough audience. And if you think about way normal host read advertising is paid today, you're only going to get $25 per 1,000 listeners. And then you're going to have a split cut with whoever is representing you for that. Or you get an underwriter, like an NPR thing, where you get someone to come and says, I love your show. I'm going to give you $300 an episode to do the podcast. That's another way. Or you say to your audience, what has been the value of my content to you? And go on the value for value model. Time, talent, or treasure. In other words, your audience gives of their time to help you with content. They give you time. Maybe they help you with social promotion. Maybe they help you with show notes, chapter files, episode art, all the plethora of things the podcasters do, time, talent. And if they don't have either of those, then say, give me your treasure. So this tip that I gave you, the show that, so you're listening to the show today with Kelly. If this was valuable to you, you said, wow, that was worth $1,000. You send Kelly $1,000. It's not a tip. You're giving value back. If this was worth $50 to you, you send Kelly $50. So it's value for value. And if you as an audience member value what you're getting back, the value for value model will actually do much, much better than pure advertising, because one person can send you $25, where a host red deal would be $25 for 1,000 people in 2.5 cents a person. Come on, or whatever that equals to, quarter, high school math here. So in the end, there's lots of way to monetize, but I think you really, that what is the goal? What is the value you're giving? And I think as audience members today, when someone tells me something and I pause and I make a note on my phone or wherever I'm at and I write something down, if I've stopped to do that, I send money back, because that was value to me that I'm going to use in my life to better myself, make more money, improve myself, whatever it may be. That was worth giving value back to the person that shared that with me. So I think from that standpoint, if you go about your content creation in that manner, you might be able to have your cake and eat it too, because if you're providing value, the show will grow. You're going to get value back from the audience. But at the same time, if you grow your show to a certain point, then you'll be able to cash in on getting a sponsor. The sponsorship I had with GoDaddy, and they still have today, was probably that conversation we had in 2005 over the span of the last 19 years was probably a $3 million conversation over 19 years.
Beautiful.
But what was the agreement that I made with GoDaddy? I get a base and I have to meet so many new customers every month. And if I get over that minimum, then I get a bonus based upon every new customer beyond that I bring in. If I don't meet the number, I get the base. So the base could have grown to 5 and 6 figures. The base normally was 4 figures, but it can, depending on my performance. So again, it depends on the ad deal you get and what you put in place. But in the end, what does GoDaddy want? New customers.
Sure.
So how do I get new customers? I have an audience. I have a podcast that's 19 plus years old. How do I get 100 new customers? 100. Let's say I have to give that GoDaddy 100 new customers every month. I have to have 100 new listeners or more, maybe 1,000 new listeners. And the reason I'm able to do that is I employ bloggers to keep driving traffic to my website that turns that traffic into subscribers, turn those subscribers into GoDaddy customers, turn those subscribers into people that provide value back to me. Again, you got to have something to feed the machine. And there's a dozen ways to do it. But in the end, to have a true sponsor, you have to have lots of people listening to that show.
So this is the business of podcasting, yeah, which is absolutely critical. And I think, obviously, people should be getting ready to send some checks in for such valuable information that is usable. Because right. I think everybody thinks, listen, I'm funny, I'm entertaining, I've got some great content. Okay, that's great for a month or 2 or 3 months. Then you need to keep creating. And obviously getting advertisers and sponsors is not the easy road. A lot of people think that it is.
If you're a comedian and can entertain me, that's value. I will still give value back. I work in a high stress environment. So I need something to pop the pressure steam off. So if I'm listening to a comedy show and they're making me laugh for an hour, it's just like going to a comedy club. What would I pay to have gone to a comedy club for 2 or 3 hours? I've probably been $50 at the door. So send some value back, even if it's comedy. I believe in rewarding content that brings value to me. And when you do that, guess what the person that's creating the content is going to do? They're going to keep creating content.
Yeah, make more.
Yeah, and work at it and be better. Nothing is more rewarding to me. I've been in lines in different places at the airport, and I've been ordering, and someone grabs me and says, "Todd, they know me. I don't know them." And that's what authors find this out, speakers, anyone that does any type of public appearances, and they know more about you than you'll ever know about them. And as long as you don't get into a stalker mode, it's wonderful because you have these great conversations of how I've affected someone's life or what they did something or they made an action. I was listening to a podcast the other day that quite frankly cost me a lot of money because I said, oh, I love this. I'm a geek guy. I'm like, oh, I'm going to buy that product. Next thing I know, it's $900 on the credit card. But it's so you can have influence in many ways.
So that's a great segue into what I wanted to ask you, because a lot of people will say, unless you have a service or a product, it's a really long road for you to be able to monetize. But if you do have a service and product, I know a lot of coaches, a lot of mentors, that is how they get people to get to see what they have to offer or
That's
invite
right.
them to events. And it's a really successful strategy. Do you agree with that?
Absolutely. Who do we not trust? Lawyers, life coaches, people that are out there to help you. Because I don't know about you, but I'm always taking a careful eye. Are you really who you say you are? And can you really do what you're saying? And if the person has a podcast, if I'm looking for a financial advisor, matter of fact, I found my financial advisor through a podcast and I listened to about 50 of their episodes. And I said, okay, I like this individual. Let me reach out. And so if you are seeking some service, this is a great way to basically look at their resume without getting the resume. And because here's what it really boils down to. Humans have this instinct ability to smell BS. And we can listen to someone and sometimes you listen to a show and you're okay, that's some hype, right? And we know it's hype because we can hear it, the voice, we can hear the discussion. But other times they say, okay, there's some real meat. That's real heart. That's real gold stuff. And those are the type of people that you want to do business with. So I think podcasts are a great way as a listener for me to find people that I want to be associated with. So take that into account if you're going to be doing content. The example I give is many years ago, I was sitting in a meeting. And supposedly some of the smartest people in the room were talking and my boss asked a question of one of those smart people and he started to elaborate and I did one of these. And for those that are listening, I was giving him the wave off. Don't do it. Because he was blowing smoke. And I was like, he already knows the answer. He's just checking you. So that guy got destroyed. He got his thumb put on him because he tried to be his way through an answer that he didn't know. So if you don't know the answer, don't answer it. If you don't, if you say, because guess what? We don't all know everything. And like today, I was on a meeting. I said, I got to go back to my dev team. I can't answer that for you. I said, I'll get you an answer, but I can't answer. People can smell a fraud a mile away. And if you endorse a product, you better love the product too.
Boy, that's the truth. You can really tell when somebody talks about it, if they're really behind it or not.
And if you listen to a multiple, maybe you don't hear it on one episode, but if you listen to 20 and who they're interviewing, who they're talking about, you can get the feel. And I don't care who you are. We've all had that person where you go, huh? Yeah, about let me get my waders on here because it's flowing pretty thick and it's entertaining. We laugh in those conversations, but when it comes to giving someone your money, you're not going to go give that person your money. So podcasts are the same way.
That's true. So you're really putting yourself out there. Authenticity is critical.
It's critical because people will smell a fraud in a heartbeat.
Well, I think this is such a powerful episode, and I'm really grateful for this. If you could go back, what advice would you give your younger self with all the experience and information you have? What would you tell your younger self with all you've learned and experienced?
definitely listen more than I talk when I was younger. Even today, listen, really listen. If you're talking to someone, really listen. And if you can't give that person your undivided attention, say, please wait just a second, attend to what you're going to do, and then come back and give that person your undivided attention. That's probably number one. Don't run something into a hole. My philosophy is we're going to take a spitball and we're going to throw it up on the wall. And if it sticks and it works and it grows, we're going to continue to make sure that it stays and grows. But if something is failing and it's not succeeding and you've given it your all, don't be afraid to flush that down the toilet, because there's nothing worse than wasting time on an effort that will never bear fruit. I had a calamansi tree in Hawaii, and the tree was about 4 years old. It was beautiful, big and bushy, and it wasn't giving me any calamansi. And calamansi is a Asian fruit, sour. To put it in iced tea, it's, if you've ever had one, you'll wish you could get it all the time. And the tree wasn't giving me any fruit. And I was fed up with giving it water and fertilizer. And I went out to it and I said, listen, if you don't start bearing fruit, I'm going to cut you down and I'm going to replace you with something else. I was serious. 3 weeks later, it blossoms all over. And I had 1,000 pieces of calamansi on the tree in the next 6 months.
I love that story because I am one that goes out and tells each of my trees, and I have fruit trees as well, and I tell them, I love you. You are my favorite. And
Well,
it's,
I was mean.
but it was paying attention, clearly. It was paying attention. They say that plants can actually accuse you. They've used them in courtrooms to identify who's guilty. I don't think we ought to treat that too frivolously.
But it just, the analogy is don't continue to dump money into something that isn't going to succeed. You'll know already, this ain't going to do it. I build a few things that we spend a lot of money on. And within 60 days of launching, I'm like, wow, that was a mistake. But we're not going to pour more money to try to fix something that can't be fixed. We're just going to move on. And so that's probably the second piece of advice I would give myself.
So learn to let it go.
Yeah. And
Learn to let
listen.
it go. So tell me right now, in your estimation, I think I know what your answer will be, but I want to ask it anyway, because just in the period of time when I've been in this industry, it's grown from 1 million podcasts to over 4 million plus podcasts. Is that about the right number these days?
But I'm going to give you the answer that maybe you're going to be surprised about. Where do
Okay.
you think? So, of those 3.7 million podcasts, how many do you think are actually producing an episode every month?
I'll bet a very small number.
About 400,000. Actually, right now, about 370,000. A year and a half ago, we were up to 470,000. So, here's the secret in the space right now. You still have the same number of people listening to podcasts that we've always had. And actually, it's growing. I think 9 or 10% last year. But you have fewer episodes now being created. And what we're seeing across the board in our statistics that all shows are growing, not necessarily by talent or content, but because the sheer nature of there's not as many podcasts and people are going deeper into the pile looking for content. So this is, and this is sounds so cliche, this is the best time ever to be a new podcaster. The best time.
Really?
It
Okay.
is
That's
absolutely. Yeah.
very encouraging, I think, to a lot of people that really want to get into this market and into this platform. So it's not oversaturated.
Nah, not at all. No.
Oh, I love hearing that.
No.
That's terrific coming from a pro like yourself. So how do you stay ahead? How do you stay relevant? How do you stay innovative? We said you've got to have an authentic voice. You need to let it go. If your show sucks, let it go. Do something else.
I've changed show names one time on a show I did. We changed it mid-show. We were saying, we're talking about this more than we're talking about that. Let's change the name of the show. And I Googled a new domain name and we changed streams within 2 minutes of a
Nuts.
conversation.
I love that. So always keep tap dancing. You can move, you
Yeah,
can
you can
shift.
move. Absolutely.
And you're going to grow with this opportunity. You have to. You don't have a choice. You have to be growing with it, with the show, with the content. You always have to be learning. I picked that up as well.
And episode 1, 10, 20, 30, 40, and 50 will not, they'll all change. So don't get wrapped around the axle that you need to put 10 episodes out. Put one out, and then two, and then three. And if you're really motivated, put three out. at once, and then four, then five, then six. 50% of new podcasters don't make it to episode seven. The 50% that's left don't make it to episode 20. Those that make it to 20 have about a 90% chance of making it to 2 years.
Those are amazing statistics. I didn't know those. That's
Because
actually shocking.
creating content's hard.
But you and I are from a time frame of, I loved what you said in the beginning, is we understand there's hard work involved. That's part of the process. You can't have anything without focus and commitment and investing in yourself.
The reward for me was house payments. I could eat, kids' college,
Those little things.
all those little things. And everyone is ever going to get a show that will earn $3 million over 20 years. I was very fortunate to have a great partner and still have a great partner. But I have literally hundreds of shows that make their car payment every month because of their podcast. And they work a full-time job or make a house payment or have enough money to take their spouse out to a nice meal where you're spending $60, $70 a head. Again, it's what do you want to accomplish with the content? And then again, if you just want to tell your story, believe it or not, Kelly, more than 50% of podcasters don't care about the money. They care about the story. They care about telling, they've had some tragedy. They've had some heartache. I've heard it all. I was in Saudi Arabia where they've opened, this is a, I could spend an hour on this, but Saudi Arabia, believe it or not, has opened up and people are creating podcasts there. And what are the stories they're telling? They're telling stories that you would maybe expect to come out of Saudi Arabia, especially from women that have been through tragedy and business. And it's so people have stories to tell. That's what this is medium's about, storytelling.
Very interesting perspective. I'm excited about that. Well, tell me, one last question I have is, are there any upcoming projects or initiatives that you're particularly excited about?
I'm very excited. I leave on May 2nd. I go to Manila to speak at PodFest Asia. It's going to be a small conference out there, but I've been asked to come out and speak and be speaking about the video portion of podcasting. I come home and I'm home just a week, and then I go to London to the podcast show, and we'll be out there exhibiting. I won't be speaking. We will be exhibiting. We'll be doing a sponsored speech, a sponsored event. So we paid our way in to do a to present the company, and that will be fully disclosed. There'll be nothing hidden about this not being a sponsored session. And then after that, we go to Washington, D.C. in August for Podcast Movement. But I'm actually looking forward to June and July where I'm going to travel a little bit, work a little bit, and recharge. And still put in 40 hours a week, but it'll be better than 60 I put in now.
Sounds like you got a really busy schedule. I want to ask you one last thing about the video casting versus doing audio versus video. Can you be as successful just doing audio, or do you feel the video is absolutely a necessity these days, and
Oh,
how does that play out?
having done video for more than 10 years, I did video in the beginning for one reason. I was recording the show at 8 o'clock Hawaiian Standard Time, and I was pretty bored being alone doing the show. So for me, I wanted a little bit of audience feedback. So New Zealand and Australia were checking in when I was doing my live video stream, and they were making comments from down under. And then it grew a little bit and it become a part of my podcast audience. 70% of my audience listen to the show, 30% watch. Why? I don't know, but 30% watch. I do not have a successful YouTube channel. Maybe 100, 200. No, that never cracked that secret because I do a podcast strategy. I don't do a YouTube strategy. And I believe there's two separate pieces of that, but I do have a podcast on Apple Podcasts that is a video podcast. So a lot of people don't know that, but you can have a true video podcast. I do stream to X, stream to Facebook, stream to YouTube. And what do I get out of that? Sometimes the live feedback from the audience. Four or five people come in and say, hey, I agree, disagree. And it's just enough to get a little extra motivation. People have more time to listen than they do have to watch. But doing video, there's one thing that you have to really be much better at than doing audio. Prepare, because I get one cut, and that's action, and that's the end. You don't, you're live. You can't, in editing video is a lot harder than editing audio. You get one take, and that's actually good for me because I don't like to edit. So I think it depends on the individual. And I think video is a little bit overrated right now. YouTube is obviously say, oh, we're the place for podcasts. Yeah, okay. I think for the top 500, yes, but the rest of the shows are in the oblivion of other millions of YouTube channels out there. So I like it. I do it. This is why the studio is the way it is, which is behind me. But do I have a big live audience? No. Do I have a big YouTube audience? No. Because again, if you're going to do YouTube, you got to do YouTube strategy. You got to feed that beast different than the podcast methodology. So
Well,
I think
what
you have to
you're
have.
doing is working. That's what I can see.
Yeah, on
It's
the podcast
amazing.
side, it's working.
That's amazing. I just want to thank you so much for sharing your incredible insights. And you are truly a wealth of knowledge about the state of, about the possibilities that are out there in the world of podcasting. And you've really left an indelible mark on the industry itself, which I so appreciate you being here, Todd.
Well, I thank you for having me, and I hope your audience has gotten something out of this. If they want to reach out to me, it's easy. It's Todd at blueberry.com. Blueberry without the E's, because we couldn't afford the $2 million to buy the E's. So it's
I love that
BLUBRY.com.
reason. Honestly, so many people are hunting for the right domain, and you just beat the system and just said, I'm going to do it like this.
In retrospect, the parent company's called Raw Voice. Why didn't we just use Raw Voice? Because Raw Voice had a tagline, fresh organic media. We're sitting around drinking in a hotel room in Chicago. What do we call this new property? We should have called it Raw Voice. We were stupid. We called it Blueberry.
But you're in too deep now. That's all there is to it. You're in too deep.
Absolutely.
There were so many key takeaways in this. I love it, but it boils down to me of be authentic. This is not a short-term project. This is the long haul. You're playing the long game here. So quality still counts. It's gonna take time to build. There are many ways to monetize this depending on what your mission is and what your goal is. These are some great takeaways. I can't even really, I'd be here another half hour trying to list out the incredible things that you have shared today. This is a very meaty episode, which is the biggest turn on for me. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was a great conversation.
So, to everybody out there, thank you everyone for tuning into the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. If you enjoyed this interview, please, I invite you to comment. Of course, I want you to like and share and subscribe. Of course, I do, because it really truly helps us grow the show and reach more aspiring speakers and podcasters like you. And a special shout out to our sponsor, speakertunity.com, because they're really your go-to source for launching or expanding your speaking career, which in the end, public speaking, whether it's podcasting, whether it's on the traditional stage, it is the fastest way to exponentially grow your business because it's all about how authentic you are. Yes, your expertise, but how authentic you are. So, with that said, this is Kelly O'Hara signing off. Remember, this stage is yours, whether it's on a traditional stage or a podcast. Seize the day. Until next time, keep speaking your truth and shaping your own destiny. That's why you're here. And as always, I look forward to our next conversation. See you next time. I want to thank you for joining us on this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. If you found value in today's episode, be sure to subscribe to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an empowering conversation. We'd also appreciate it if you could leave us a review and share the show with your friends, colleagues, and your fellow visionaries. Until next time, keep speaking, keep growing, and keep reaching to make your difference. This is Kelly O'Hara, signing off from the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.